So Manchester United Football Club has confirmed that striker Mason Greenwood will leave by mutual consent after a six-month internal investigation into his conduct. The forward, who's also been capped by England at senior level, was arrested in January last year following allegations surrounding material that was published online. But charges against the 21-year-old, including attempted rape and assault, were dropped in February. In a statement, Manchester United said, "All those involved, including Mason, recognise the difficulties with him recommencing his career at Manchester United. But that, based on evidence available to us, Mason did not commit the offences in respect of which he was originally charged." Mason Greenwood himself has issued a statement accepting that he had, and I quote, "made mistakes," but added, "I did not do the things I was accused of." This morning, we want to talk about social accountability when it comes to football clubs and the culture of misogyny which still exists within the game. Stephanie Hilborn, OBE, is Chief Executive of Women in Sport and joins me now. Stephanie, morning to you.
Good morning.
It's interesting that the phrase bringing Manchester United into disrepute, I wonder where social accountability comes into this in terms of how employees, like, for example, you know, I have a duty to my employee to not bring its brand into disrepute. I wonder how much social accountability there is in sport.
Well, that's a very good question. And I think it's about strong leadership, isn't it? Where's the strong leadership? Because that's what brings the social accountability. And our concern at Women in Sport is that we know that misogyny is rife in society as a whole, and we know that it has been allowed to be rife in sport, and we have very few women at the top of sport, which is one important point to note. I think 4% of the board positions of the top four league tiers in men's football are held by women. Two-thirds of the Premier League clubs have no women on their board at all, and there needs to be an evening out of that. And beyond that, there needs to be a recognition and an understanding of what misogyny is, because that's the backdrop for any of these big issues. And without that, and without some formal introduction of anti-misogyny policies and training around it, whether it's in sport or anywhere else, it's going to carry on being rife, because that's the backdrop. That's the reality of the lives for every, you know, woman and girl.
And it's interesting because Laurie was talking about how there was discomfort amongst staff and members of the club lower down, kind of all around, not necessarily just at the board level. I just wonder, when you look at the image of football, or the image that footballers has had, and the behaviour of some footballers, and I'm thinking back to tabloid stories a decade ago even, of, you know, social lives, etc., how much attention should or do clubs pay to that in terms of how then that the club's brand is seen?
I think the brand of any organisation is an expression of its personality. And if you get the personality right, that is the brand. So to some extent, it's concerning to think that people are only worried about reputation. I know people aren't only, but that sort of that mindset, even that conversation, suggests it doesn't matter in its own right. It only matters because of reputation. And we need to get away from that mindset, I think, in society and in sport in particular. It is not about protecting brand, it's about protecting your women and girls, about investing in educating your whole staff about what these issues are about and how they affect people's lives. So, you know, I've slightly sort of gone around about that question, but I think that's what's so painful sometimes to see, that rather than doing the right thing for the right thing's sake, we sometimes see organisations doing something more to just, you know, short-term protect its brand. Because in the long term, the most successful clubs now will be the ones who embrace the historic success of the Lionesses, who bring their women's football teams up to, you know, an equal level in terms of access to facilities, not necessarily 75 grand a week, which I'm not sure is advisable for anyone. But, you know, they just need to equalise everything, and then we'll start to get a bit more balance, because these guys' lives are not balanced.
Talking of balance, I mean, without, just for men's football teams, when I'm particularly thinking of, I don't know, pictures of footballers out in the town with lots of women, or reports of their sex lives, etc. Do you think that, and not reported nicely, to be completely honest, in a fairly misogynistic way, do you think that is that is what needs to be realised, that that in itself is misogynistic and not a good reflection, you know, for fans to support a team that has players like that.
There's certainly a system around the players, around the clubs, in the journalists, etc., which historically has been hugely misogynistic and, again, had no women in it either. Not to say that women can't sometimes fall into that trap too. I think what's interesting is that there has been quite a shift, but it hasn't gone far enough, and there isn't that clarity about the moral messages you're giving when you're reporting quite glibly about some of these lives. And in the end, it's about how do we redefine, we're talking a bit about how we redefine masculinity on the streets, aren't we, in the wake of some of the tragedies we've had recently, but how do we redefine it in sport? At our charity, we do research, and one of the pieces we've just been looking at is into how the expectations are set on little boys very young, you know, under 11, how important it's seen to them to be prove they're good at sport, and how that contributes to their behaviours towards girls, even in the playground, because it's such an important status symbol for them. And you just think that that goes on and on. It accumulates throughout life. So we need to be thinking quite profoundly about the stereotyping from very early years, which we know as a charity is what is putting a lot of girls off sport, because they're being stereotyped out of it. It's also suggesting it's okay to behave in certain ways, which start seeming quite harmless, but actually they are a little bit harmful, but end up being potentially really devastating to women and girls' lives.
You know, I think back to certain managers who aren't managing in the Premier League anymore, who had reputations for being not just managing the game, the tactics on the pitch, but the behaviour, food intake, for example, diets, but also behaviour of their players. Do you feel that is prevalent today?
I think we've seen some leadership from Gareth Southgate. Certainly the culture that he's invested in the England team, for example, you know, has been really powerful to watch, I think. And I think managers do have a responsibility to lead by example and to set out their values. I don't know how, I mean, I think there's got to be a limit, and I think that's one of the issues that's been swirling around the press about the Spanish manager of the women's team. There has to be certain limits on on controlling players. They are people and they need to have their lives, but there's something about making sure those values are held up within a team and within a club that's absolutely vital, for sure.
Yeah, it's interesting. What's the answer here? Do we need more Gareth Southgate stepping up? I know he's the manager of the national team, but more domestic team managers stepping up?
Well, I think we do, and I think it's very interesting how the decision was taken, I think, not entirely sure, by the FA. I think Sue Campbell had a hand in it to appoint Serena Beekman. It was such a brilliant decision on so many levels, not simply because of her tactical, as if it's more tactical genius, but her value system, the way she leads. And I think those taking the decisions about who they put into the positions of power, who are leading our different clubs, our different teams, is absolutely critical, because we know that that's one of the big issues that women who are playing sport face, is that the culture of hero worshipping, that the people who've achieved great things in sport, sometimes just sweeps away really important values that they should have. And that's what, you know, leads us to worry about the individual athletes, for example, who can be coached by men, who can be, you know, quite abusive, for example. I'm not saying women can't in other ways. But the choice of leader is ultimately the most important thing. So who makes that choice, which takes us back to boards, is very important too. And they need to be making that choice, not simply on their ability to win.
Stephanie,
their personalities and what values they stand for.
Sorry, we just lost you in the last few seconds.
I'm so sorry.
No, it's the Zoom link. We absolutely got the gist of it. Valuable conversation, really provides some really good food for thought. Thank you so much. Stephanie Hilborn, OBE, Chief Executive of Women in Sport. Lots of you getting in touch regarding lost luggage. 11